First comes in, Santa. He makes me guess what kind of job he's got. First, I guess, butcher, you know?
Of course.
So he says, very insolent, guess again, you ain't even close. I keep guessing for about 5 minutes until I can't think of no more jobs where you'd be wearing one of them white uniforms. Then he finally says, wrong every time. I got me a job selling weenies. I almost passed out, Santa, right on the kitchen floor. Wouldn't that have been fine, me with my head broke open on the linoleum?
He wouldn't care, not that one.
Not him.
Never in a million years.
He don't care about his poor mama, Mrs. Riley said. With all his education, mind you. Selling weenies out on the street in the broad daylight.
So what you told him, girl?
I didn't tell him nothing. By the time I got my mouth open, he runs off to the bathroom. He's still locked up in there, splashing water all over the floor.
Hold on a minute, Irene. I got one of my little grandchildren over here for the day,
Santa said, and screamed at someone at her end of the line.
Get the hell away from that stove, Charmaine, and go play out on the banquette before I bust you right in the mouth.
A child's voice made some reply.
Lord,
Santa continued calmly to Mrs. Riley.
Them kids is sweet, but sometimes I just don't know.
Charmaine, get the hell outside and go play on your bike before I come slap your face off.
Hold the line, Irene.
Mrs. Riley heard Santa put the telephone down. Then a child screamed, a door slammed, and Santa was back on the line.
Christ, I tell you true, Irene, that child won't listen to nobody. I'm trying to cook her some spaghettis and daub, and she keeps playing in my pot. I wish them sisters at her school would beat up on her a little. You know, Angelo, you should have seen how them sisters beat up on him when he was a kid. One sister throwed him right into a blackboard. That's how come Angelo's such a sweet, considerate man today.
The sisters loved Ignatius. He was such a darling child. He used to win all them little holy pictures for knowing his catechism.
Them sisters should have knocked his head in.
When he used to come home with all them little holy pictures, Mrs. Riley sniffed, I sure never thought he'd end up selling weenies in the broad daylight.
Mrs. Riley coughed nervously and violently into the telephone.
But tell me, sweetheart, how's Angelo making out?
His wife Rita rings me up a little while ago to tell me she thinks he's coming down with pneumonia from being stuck in that toilet all the time. I tell you true, Irene, that Angelo's getting as pale as a ghost. The cops sure don't treat that boy right. He loves the force. When he graduated from the cops academy, you would have thought he just made it out of the Ivory League. He was sure proud.
Yeah, poor Angelo looks bad,
Mrs. Riley agreed.
He's got him a bad cough, that boy. Well, maybe he'll feel a little better after he reads that thing Ignatius gave me to give him. Ignatius says it's inspirational literature.
Yeah? I wouldn't trust no inspirational literature I got from that Ignatius. It's probably full of dirty stories.
Suppose somebody I know sees him with one of them wagons.
Don't be ashamed, babe. It ain't your fault you got a brat on your hands,
Santa grunted.
What you need is a man in that house, girl, to set that boy straight. I'm gonna find that nice old man asked about you. I don't want a nice old man. All I want is a nice child.
Don't you worry. Just leave it to Santa. I'll fix you up. The man runs the fish market, says he don't know the man's name, but I'll find out. As a matter of fact, I think I seen him walking down St. Ferdinand Street the other day.
He asked about me?
Well, Irene, I mean, I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I don't even know if it was the same man.
You see that? That old man don't care neither.
Don't talk like that, girl. I'll ask over by the beer parlor. I'll hang around Sunday Mass. I'll find out his name.
That old man don't care for me.
Irene, there's no harm in meeting him.
I got enough problems with Ignatius. It's the disgrace, Santa. Suppose Miss Annie, the next-door lady, sees him with one of them wagons. She's already about to get us put under a peace bond. She's all the time spying in that alley behind the shutters.
You can't worry about people, Irene,
Santa advised.
The people on my block got dirty mouths. If you can live down here in St. Odo of Cluny Parish, you can live anywhere. Vicious is the word, believe me. I got one woman on my block's gonna get a brick right in the face if she don't shut up about me. Somebody told me she's been calling me a merry widow. But don't you worry, I'm gonna get her good. I think she's running with some man works at the shipyards, anyways. I think I'm gonna write her husband a little anonymous letter to straighten out that girl. I know what it is, Sugar. Remember, I lived down there on Dauphin when I was a girl. The anonymous letters my papa used to get. About me. Vicious. I always thought my cousin, that poor spinster girl, was writing them. Which cousin was that?
Santa asked with interest. Irene Riley's relatives always had gory biographies that were worth hearing.
That was the one knocked a pot of boiling water on her arm when she was a child. She was kind of scalded-looking, you know what I mean? I always seen her writing away at the kitchen table at her mama's house. She was probably writing about me. She was very jealous when Mr. Riley started seeing me.
That's the way it goes, Santa said.
A scalded relative was a dull figure in Irene's dramatic gallery. Then she said hoarsely and cheerfully,
I'll have a little party with you and Angelo and his wife, if she'll come.
Oh, that's sweet, Santa, but I don't feel much like a party these days.
It'll do you good to shake yourself a little, girl. If I can find out about that old man, I'd invite him over, too. You and him can dance.
Well, if you see the old man, babe, tell him Miss Riley said hello.
Behind the bathroom door, Ignatius was lying passively in the tepid water, pushing the plastic soap dish back and forth across the surface with one finger, and listening now and then to his mother on the telephone. Occasionally, he held the soap dish down until it filled with water and sank. Then he would feel for it on the bottom of the tub, empty it, and sail it again. His blue and yellow eyes rested on an unopened manila envelope on the top of the toilet. For quite a while, Ignatius had been trying to decide whether or not he would open the envelope. The trauma of having found employment had affected his valve negatively, and he was waiting until the warm water in which he wallowed like a pink hippopotamus had a calming effect upon his system. Then he would attack the envelope. Paradise Vendor should prove to be a pleasant employer. He would spend his time parked somewhere by the river, accumulating notes for the journal. Mr. Clyde had a certain paternal quality that Ignatius liked. The old man, the scarred and wizened mogul of the Frankfurter, would be a welcome new character in the journal. At last Ignatius felt relaxed enough, and raising his dripping hulk out of the water, picked up the envelope.
"Why must you use this sort of envelope?"
he asked angrily, studying the little circle of Planetarium Station, New York, postmark on the thick tan paper.
"The contents are probably written in marking pencil or worse."
He tore the envelope open, wetting the paper, and pulled out a folded poster that said in large letters,
"Lecture! Lecture! M. Minkoff speaks boldly about sex in politics, erotic liberty as a weapon against reactionaries. 8 p.m., Thursday the 28th, YMHA Grand Concourse. Admission $1. Or, sign M. Minkoff's petition which aggressively demands more and better sex for all and a crash program for minorities. The petition will be mailed to Washington. Sign now and save America from sexual ignorance, chastity, and fear. Are you committed enough to help in this bold and crucial movement?"
"Oh, my God!"
Ignatius spurted through his dripping mustache.
"Are they letting her speak in public now? What in the world does the title of this ludicrous lecture mean?"
Ignatius read the poster again, viciously.
"At any rate, I know that she will speak boldly, and in a perverse way I wish that I could hear that little minx babbling before an audience. This time she has outdone herself in offending taste and decency."
Following a handwritten arrow at the bottom of the poster and the word "over," Ignatius complied and looked at the other side of the poster, where Myrna had written something.
"Sirs, what is wrong, Ignatius? I have not heard from you." "Well, I don't really blame you for not writing. I guess I came on a little strong in my last letter, but it was only because your paranoid fantasy disturbed me, rooted as it possibly was in your unhealthy attitude toward sex. You know that ever since I first met you, I have directed pointed questions at you in order to clarify your sexual inclinations. My other desire was to aid you in finding your true self-expression and contentment through satisfying natural orgasm. I respect your mind, and I have always accepted your eccentric tendencies, and that is why I want to see you reach the plateau of perfect mental sexual balance. A good explosive orgasm would cleanse your being and bring you out of the shadows. Just don't be angry at me about the letter. I will explain this poster a little later in this letter, because I imagine you are interested in knowing how this bold, dedicated lecture came about. First, though, I must tell you that the movie is off, so if you are planning to play the landlord, forget it. Basically, we had trouble with funds. I could not milk another drachma out of my father, so Leola, the Harlem find, got very hostile about salary, or lack of it, and finally dropped a remark or two that sounded a little anti-Semitic to me. Who needs a girl who isn't dedicated enough to work gratis in a project that would benefit her race? Samuel has decided to become a forest ranger in Montana because he is planning a dramatic allegory set in a dark woods, ignorance and custom, and he wants to get the feel of the forest. From what I know of Samuel, he will be a big flop as a ranger, but the allegory, I know, will be challenging and controversial, full of unpleasant truths. Wish him well. He is fantastic. To get back to the lecture. At last it seems that I am finding a platform for my philosophy, etc. It all happened in a strange way. A few weeks ago, I was at a party that some friends were giving for this very real boy who had just returned from Israel. He was unbelievable. I mean that. Ignatius emitted a little paradise gas. For hours and hours, he sang these folk songs he had picked up over there, really significant songs that proved my theory that music should basically be an instrument of social protest and expression. He kept us all in that apartment for hours and hours, listening and asking for more. Later, we all started talking, on many levels, and I let him know what was on my mind in general. Ignatius yawned violently. He said, "Why are you keeping all of this to yourself, Myrna? Why haven't you let the world in on this?" I told him that I often spoke in discussion groups and in my group therapy group. I also told him about these letters of mine to the editor that had been printed in The New Democracy and Man and Masses and Now. "Get out of that tub, boy!" Ignatius heard his mother scream outside the door of the bathroom.
"Why?" he asked. "Are you going to use it?"
"No."
"Then please go away."
"You've been in there too long."
"Please, I'm attempting to read a letter."
"A letter? Who wrote you a letter?"
"My dear friend, Miss Minkoff."
"The last thing you said was she got you fired out of Levy Pants."
"Well, she did. However, it might have been a favor in disguise. My new work may prove rather agreeable."
"Ain't that awful?" Mrs. Riley said sadly. "You get fired out of a two-bit clerk job in a factory, and now you're selling weenies in the streets. Well, I'll tell you one thing, Ignatius. You better not get fired by the weenie man. You know what Santa said?"
"I'm sure that it was rather perceptive and incisive, whatever it was. I would imagine that it is rather difficult to comprehend her assaults upon the mother tongue."
"She said somebody ought to punch you right in the nose."
"Coming from her, that's rather literate."
"What that man is doing now?"
Mrs. Riley asked suspiciously.
"How come she's writing so much? She needed a good bath, that girl."
"Myrna's psyche is only capable of dealing with water in an oral context."
"What?"
"Will you please stop shrieking like a fishmonger and run along? Don't you have a bottle of muscatel baking in the oven? Now let me alone. I'm very nervous."
"Nervous? You've been in that hot water over an hour."
"It's hardly hot anymore."
"Then get out of the tub."
"Why is it so important to you that I leave this tub?" "Mother, I really don't understand you at all. Isn't there something that, as a housekeeper, you feel compelled to do at the moment? I noticed this morning that the lint in the hallway is forming into spheres almost as large as baseballs. Clean the house. Telephone for the correct time. Do something. Lie down and take a nap. You're looking rather peaked these days."
"Of course I am, boy. You breaking your poor mama's heart. What would you do if I dropped dead?"
"Well, I am not going to participate in this idiotic conversation. Carry on a monologue out there, if you wish. Quietly. I must concentrate upon the new offenses that M. Minkoff has conceived in this letter."
"I can't take it no more, Ignatius. You're gonna find me laying in the kitchen one of these days with a stroke. Just watch, boy. You're gonna be all alone in the world.
Then you're going to fall on your knees and pray to God for the way you treated your poor dear mother.
From the bathroom there came only silence. Mrs. Riley waited for at least a splash of water or a rustle of paper, but the bathroom door might as well have been the door of a tomb. After a minute or two of fruitless waiting, she walked off down the hall toward the oven. When Ignatius heard the oven door creak open, he returned to the letter.
He said, "With that voice and personality, you should be appearing before the people in prison. This guy was really amazing. In addition to his tough mind, he was a real mensch. He was so gentlemanly and thoughtful I could hardly believe it. Especially after dealing with Samuel, who was dedicated and unafraid, but all a little too loud and something of a clod. I never met anybody so dedicated to fighting reactionary ideas and prejudice as this folk singer. His very best friend was a Negro abstractionist, he said, who made magnificent smears of protest and defiance across the canvas, sometimes slashing the canvas to shreds with a knife. He handed me this brilliant pamphlet that showed in detail how the Pope is trying to assemble a nuclear armory. It really opened my mind, and I forwarded it to the editor of the New Democracy to aid him in his battle against the Church. But this guy also had this big thing against wasps, like he hated them. I mean, this fellow was sharp. The next day I got a telephone call from him. Would I lecture to this social action group he was going to form somewhere in Brooklyn Heights? I was overcome. In this world of dog-eat-dog, it is rare to find a friend, a really sincere friend, or so I thought. Well, to make my point as briefly as possible, I had learned the hard way that the lecture circuit is something like show business, the casting couch in that routine. Get what I mean?
Do I believe this egregious offense against good taste that I'm reading? Ignatius asked the floating soap dish. This girl is without shame entirely.
Again, I have been awakened to the fact that my body appeals to some people more than my mind.
Ho-hum, Ignatius sighed.
Personally, I feel like exposing this phony folk singer, who I guess is preying on some other dedicated young girl liberal at this moment. Somebody I know said she heard this folk singer guy is really a Baptist from Alabama. Boy, what a fraud he was. So then I checked on this pamphlet he had given me and discovered that it was printed by the Klan. This will give you some idea of the ideological subtleties which we have to deal with today. It sounded like a good liberal pamphlet to me. Now I have had to humiliate myself by writing to the editor of the New Democracy to tell him that the pamphlet, although challenging, was written by the wrong people. Well, the wasp struck back and got me this time. The incident reminded me of the time in Poe Park when this squirrel I was feeding turned out to be really a rat, which at first glance could have passed for a squirrel any day. So live and learn. This phony gave me an idea. You can always learn something from crumbs. I decided to ask up here at the Y if I could get the auditorium one night. After a while, they said okay. Of course, the audience up here at the Bronx Y will probably be a little parochial, but if I make good in the lecture, I might one day end up speaking down at the Lexington Avenue Y, where great thinkers like Norman Mailer and Seymour Krim are always airing their views. It won't hurt to try. I hope that you are working on your personality problems, Ignatius. Is the paranoia getting any worse? The basis for the paranoia, I think, is the fact that you're always sealed up in that room and have become suspicious of the outside world. I don't know why you insisted on living way down there with the alligators. In spite of the complete overhaul that your mind is crying for, you have a brain that could really grow and flower here in New York. As it is, you are thwarting yourself and your mentality. The last time I saw you, when I was passing through from Mississippi, you were in pretty bad shape. You've probably regressed completely by now, living in that substandard old house with only your mother for company. Aren't your natural impulses crying for release? A beautiful and meaningful love affair would transform you, Ignatius. I know it would. Great Oedipus bonds are encircling your brain and destroying you. I don't imagine that your sociological or political ideas are getting any more progressive either. Have you abandoned your project to form a political party or nominate a candidate for president by divine right? I remember that when I finally met you and challenged your political apathy, you came up with this idea. I knew that it was a reactionary project, but it at least showed that you were developing some political consciousness. Please write to me about the matter. I am very concerned. We need a three-party system in this country, and I think that day by day the fascists are growing in strength. This Divine Right Party is the sort of fringe group scheme that would siphon off a large part of the fascist support. Well, let me stop. I hope the lecture is a success. You especially would benefit from its message. By the way, if you ever do activate the Divine Right movement, I can give you some help in organizing a chapter up here. Please get out of the house, Ignatius, and enter into the world around you. I am worried about your future. You have always been one of my most important projects, and I am interested in hearing of your current mental condition. So please get out of the pillows and write. M. Minkoff.
Later, his puckered pink skin wrapped in the old flannel robe that a safety pin held around his hips, Ignatius sat at the desk in his room, filling his fountain pen. In the hall, his mother was speaking to someone else on the telephone, saying,
"And I used every last cent of the insurance money his poor old Grandma Riley left just to keep him in college. Ain't that awful? All that money down the drain."
Ignatius belched and opened a drawer to search for the stationery that he believed he still had. There he found the yo-yo that he had bought from the Filipino who had been selling them in the neighborhood a few months ago. On one side of the yo-yo there was a palm tree which the Filipino had carved at Ignatius's request. Ignatius spun the yo-yo downward, but the string snapped and it rattled across the floor and under the bed, where it landed on a pile of Big Chief tablets and old magazines. Removing the piece of string that hung from his finger, he dug into the drawer again and found a sheet of paper with a Levy Pants letterhead.
"Beloved Myrna, I have received your offensive communication. Do you seriously think that I'm interested in your tawdry encounters with such subhumans as folk singers? In every letter of yours, I seem to find some reference to the sleaziness of your personal life. Please confine yourself to discussing issues and such. Thereby, you will at least avoid obscenity and offense. I did think, however, that the symbolism of the rat and squirrel, or rat-squirrel, or squirrel-rat, was evocative and rather excellent. On the dark night of that dubious lecture, the sole member of your audience will probably be some desperately lonely old male librarian who saw a light in the window of the lecture hall and hopefully came in to escape the cold and the horrors of his personal hell. There in the hall, his stooped figure sitting alone before the podium, your nasal voice echoing among the empty chairs and hammering boredom, confusion, and sexual reference deeper and deeper into the poor wretch's bald skull, confounded to the point of hysteria, he will doubtlessly exhibit himself, waving his crabbed organ like a club in despair against the grim sound that drones on and on over his head. If I were you, I would cancel the lecture immediately. I am certain that the Y management would be only too glad to accept your withdrawal, especially if they have had a chance to see that tasteless poster which is now, no doubt, tacked to every telephone pole in the Bronx. The comments upon my personal life were uncalled for and revealed a shocking lack of taste and decency. Actually, my personal life has undergone a metamorphosis. I am currently connected in a most vital manner with the food merchandising industry, and therefore I doubt quite seriously whether I shall have much time in the future to correspond with you. Busily, Ignatius.
Chapter 8.
"Let her alone," Mr. Levy said. "Look, she's trying to sleep."
"Let her alone?"
Mrs. Levy propped up Miss Trixie on the yellow nylon couch.
"Do you realize, Gus, that this is the tragedy of this poor woman's life? She's always been alone. She needs someone. She needs love."
"Ugh."
Mrs. Levy was a woman of interests and ideals. Over the years, she had given herself freely to bridge, African violets, Susan and Sandra, golf, Miami, Fanny Hurst and Hemingway, correspondence courses, hairdressers, the sun, gourmet foods, ballroom dancing, and, in recent years, Miss Trixie. She had always had to settle for Miss Trixie at a distance, an unsatisfactory arrangement for carrying out the program outlined in the psychology correspondence course, the final examination of which she had failed resoundingly. The correspondence school had even refused to give her an F. But now that Mrs. Levy had played her card correctly in the game dealing with the firing of the young idealist, she had Miss Trixie in the wrinkled flesh, visor, sneakers, and all. Mr. Gonzalez had gladly given the assistant accountant an indefinite vacation.
"Miss Trixie," Mrs. Levy said sweetly, "wake up."
Miss Trixie opened her eyes and wheezed,
"Am I retired?"
No, darling.
What? Miss Trixie snarled. I thought I was retired.
Miss Trixie, you think that you're old and tired. This is very bad.
Who?
You.
Oh, I am. I am very tired.
Don't you see? Mrs. Levy asked. It's all in your mind. You have this age psychosis. You're still a very attractive woman. You must say to yourself, I am still attractive. I am a very attractive woman.
Miss Trixie exhaled a grunting snore into Mrs. Levy's lacquered hair.
Will you please let her alone, Dr. Freud?
Mr. Levy said angrily, looking up from a Sports Illustrated.
Almost wish Susan and Sandra were home so you could play with them. Whatever happened to your canasta circle?
Don't talk to me, you failure. How can I play canasta when there's a psycho in distress?
Psycho? The woman's senile. We had to stop at about 30 gas stations on the way over here. Finally, I got tired of getting out of the car and showing her which was the men's and which was the women's, so I let her pick them herself. I worked out a system. The law of averages. I laid money on her, and she came out about 50-50.
Don't tell me any more, Mrs. Levy cautioned. Not another word. It's too typical, permitting this anal compulsive to flounder like that.
Isn't Lawrence well gone?
Miss Trixie asked suddenly.
No, dear, relax.
It is Saturday.
He'll be on. Don't worry. Now tell me, what do you dream about?
I can't remember at the moment.
Try,
Mrs. Levy said, making some sort of note on her date book with a rhinestoned automatic pencil.
You must try, Miss Trixie. Darling, your mind is warped. You're like a cripple.
I may be old, but I'm not crippled,
Miss Trixie said wildly.
Look, you're exciting at Florence Nightingale,
Mr. Levy said.
With all you know about psychoanalysis, you're going to ruin whatever's left in that head of hers. All she wants is to retire and sleep.
You've already wrecked your life. Don't do the same to hers. This case can't be retired. She must be made to feel wanted and needed and loved.
Turn on your goddamn exercising board and let her take a nap.
I thought we agreed to let the board out of this.
Let her alone. Let her alone. Go ride your exercycle.
Quiet, please.
Miss Trixie croaked and rubbed her eyes.
We must talk pleasantly in front of her,
Mrs. Levy whispered.
Loud voices, arguing, will only make her more insecure.
I'll buy that. Keep quiet. And get that senile bag out of my rumpus room.
That's right. Think about yourself as usual. If your father could only see you today.
Mrs. Levy's aqua lids rose in horror.
A moth-eaten playboy looking for kicks.
Kicks?
Now you people shut up,
Miss Trixie warned.
I must say it was a dark day when I was brought out here. It was much nicer in there with Gomez.
Nice and quiet.
If this is some sort of an April Fool, I don't think it's funny.
She looked at Mr. Levy through rheumy eyes.
You're the bird that fired my friend Gloria. Poor Gloria, the kindest person ever worked in that office.
Oh, no,
Mrs. Levy sighed. Then she turned on her husband.
So you only fired one person, is that right? What about this Gloria? One person treats Miss Trixie like a human being. One person is her friend. Do you know this? Do you care? Oh, no. Levy pants might as well be on Mars for all you care. You walk in from the track one day and kick Gloria out.
Gloria? Mr. Levy asked. I didn't fire any Gloria.
Yes, you did,
Miss Trixie piped.
I saw it with my very own eyes. Poor Gloria with the soul of kindness. I remember Gloria gave me socks and luncheon meat.
Socks and luncheon meat?
Mr. Levy whistled through his teeth.
Oh, boy.
That's right, Mrs. Levy shouted. Make fun of this neglected creature. Just don't tell me whatever else you did at Levy Pants. I couldn't bear it. I won't tell the girls about Gloria. They wouldn't understand a heart like yours. They're too innocent.
No, you'd better not try to tell them about Gloria,
Mr. Levy said angrily.
Any more of this foolishness and you'll be down on the beach in San Juan with your mother, laughing and swimming and dancing.
Are you threatening me?
Now quiet! Miss Trixie snarled more loudly. I want to go back to Levy Pants right this very minute.
You see that? Mrs. Levy asked her husband. You hear that desire to work, and you want to crush her by retiring her. Gus, please, get help. You're going to end badly.
Miss Trixie was reaching for the bag of scraps that she had brought as luggage.
Okay, Miss Trixie,
Mr. Levy said as if he were summoning a pet cat.
Let's go get in the car.
Thank goodness,
Miss Trixie sighed.
Take your hands off her,
Mrs. Levy screamed.
I haven't even gotten up from my chair,
her husband answered. Mrs. Levy shoved Miss Trixie down on the couch again and said,
Now stay there. You need help.
Not from you people,
Miss Trixie wheezed.
Let me up. Let her up.
Please.
Mrs. Levy held up a warning hand, plump and ringed. Don't worry about this neglected creature I've taken under my wing. Don't worry about me either. Forget your little daughters. Get in your sports car and ride. There's a regatta this afternoon. Look, you can see the sails from the picture window I had installed with your father's hard-earned money.
I'll get even with you people,
Miss Trixie was snarling on the couch.
Don't worry, you'll find out.
She tried to rise, but Mrs. Levy had pinned her to the yellow nylon. His cold was getting worse and worse, and each cough caused a vague pain in his lungs that lingered on for moments after the cough had seared his throat and chest. Patrolman Mancuso wiped his mouth clean of saliva and tried to clear the phlegm from his throat. One afternoon he had had such a bad case of claustrophobia that he almost fainted in the booth. Now it seemed that he was ready to faint from the dizziness that the cold had induced. He leaned his head against the side of the booth for a moment and closed his eyes. Red and blue clouds floated across his eyelids. He had to capture some character and get out of that restroom before his ague got so bad that the sergeant had to carry him to and from the booth every day. He had always hoped to win honor on the force, but what honor was there in dying of pneumonia in a bus station restroom? Even his relatives would laugh. What would his children say to their friends at school? Patrolman Mancuso looked at the tiles on the floor. They were out of focus. He felt panic. Then he stared at them more closely and saw that the haze was only the moisture that formed a gray film over almost every surface in the restroom. He looked again at the Consolation of Philosophy, which was opened on his lap, and turned a limp, damp page. The book was making him more depressed. The guy who wrote it was going to be tortured by the king. The preface had said so. Now, all this time the guy was writing this thing, he was going to end up with something driven down into his head. Patrolman Mancuso felt sorry for the guy and felt obliged to read what he had written. So far, he had covered only about 20 pages and was beginning to wonder whether this Boethius was something of a gambler. He was always talking about fate and odds and the Wheel of Fortune. Anyway, it wasn't the kind of book that exactly made you look up to the brighter side. After a few sentences, Patrolman Mancuso's mind began to wander. He looked out through the crack in the door of the booth, which he always left open an inch or two so that he could see who was using the urinals, the lavatories, and the paper towel box. There at the lavatories was the same boy that Patrolman Mancuso had been seeing every day, it seemed. He watched the delicate boots moving back and forth from the lavatory to the paper towel dispenser. The boy leaned against the lavatory and began drawing on the back of his hands with a ballpoint pen. There might be something in this, Patrolman Mancuso thought. He opened the booth and went up to the boy. Coughing, he tried to say pleasantly,
What's that you're writing on your hand, pal?
George looked at the monocle and the beard at his elbow and said,
Get the hell away from me before I kick your nuts in! Called the police,
Patrolman Mancuso taunted.
No, George answered. Just get away. I ain't making trouble. You afraid of the police?
George wondered who this nut was. He was as bad as that hot dog vendor.
Look, Kooky, move it. I don't want no trouble with the cops. You don't?
Patrolman Mancuso asked happily.
No, and neither does a screwball like you.
George said, looking at the watering eye behind the monocle and the moistness at the mouth of the beard.
You under arrest,
Patrolman Mancuso coughed.
What? Boy, are you out of it. Patrolled Bad Badcuso, undercover.
A badge flashed in front of George's pimples.
Cabalog would be.
What the hell are you arresting me for? I'm just standing here.
George protested nervously.
I ain't done nothing. What is this?
You utter suspicion.
Suspicion of what?
George asked in panic.
Aha!
Patrolman Mancuso slobbered.
You really afraid?
He reached out to grab George by the arm and handcuff him, but George snatched the consolation of philosophy from under Patrolman Mancuso's arm and slammed it into the side of his head. Ignatius had bought a large, elegant, limited edition of the English translation, and all $15 of its price hit Patrolman Mancuso in the head with the force of a dictionary. Patrolman Mancuso bent over to pick up the monocle, which had fallen from his eye. When he straightened up again, he saw the boy scraping rapidly out of the door of the restroom with a book in his hand. He wanted to run after him, but his head was throbbing too badly. He returned to his booth to rest and grew even more depressed. What could he tell Mrs. Riley about the book? George opened the locker in the waiting room of the bus terminal as quickly as he could and took out the brown paper packages he had stored. Without closing the locker door, he ran out onto Canal Street and jogged metallically toward the Central Business District, looking over his shoulder for the beard and monocle. There was no beard anywhere behind him. This was really bad luck. That undercover agent would be prowling the bus station all afternoon looking for him. And what about tomorrow? The bus station was no longer safe. It was off-limits.
Damn, Miss Lee!
George said aloud, still walking as fast as he could. If she weren't so tight, this wouldn't have happened. She could have fired the jig, and he could have kept on picking up his packages at the old time, 2 o'clock. As it was, he had almost been arrested. And it was all because he had to go check the stuff in the bus station, all because he was stuck with the stuff now for 2 hours every afternoon. Where did you put stuff like that? You could get tired of carrying that stuff around all afternoon. Mother was home all the time, so you couldn't go around there with it.
Tight bitch,
George mumbled. He tucked the packages higher up under his arm and realized that he was also carrying the book he had taken from the undercover agent.
Stealing from a cop.
That was good, too. Miss Lee had asked him to bring her the book she needed. George looked at the title, The Consolation of Philosophy. Well, she had a book now. Santa Battaglia tasted a spoonful of the potato salad, cleaned the spoon with her tongue, and placed the spoon neatly on a paper napkin next to the plate of salad. Sucking some pieces of parsley and onion from between her teeth, she said to the picture of her mother on the mantelpiece,
"They gonna love that. Nobody makes a good potato salad like Santa."
The parlor was almost ready for the party. On top of the old console radio, there were 2/5 of Early Times and a 6-bottle carton of 7-Up. The phonograph she had borrowed from her niece sat on the mopped linoleum in the center of the room, the cord rising to the chandelier where it was plugged in. 2 giant-sized bags of potato chips rested in either corner of the red plush sofa. A fork stuck out of the open bottle of olives that she had placed on a tin tray on top of the covered and folded rollaway bed. Santa grabbed the picture on the mantelpiece, a photograph of an ancient and hostile-looking woman in a black dress and black stockings, standing in a dark alley paved with oyster shells.
"Poor Mama,"
Santa said feelingly, giving the picture a loud, wet kiss. The grease on the glass that covered the photograph showed the frequency of these affectionate onslaughts.
"You sure had it hard, kid."
The little black coals of Sicilian eyes glared almost animatedly at Santa from the snapshot.
"The only picture of you I got, Mama, and you standing in a alley. Ain't that a shame?"
Santa sighed at the unfairness of it all and slammed the picture down on the mantelpiece among the bowl of wax fruit and the bouquet of paper zinnias and the statue of the Virgin Mary and the figurine of the Infant of Prague. Then she went back to the kitchen to get some ice cubes and one of the kitchen chairs. After she had returned with the chair and a little picnic cooler of ice cubes, she arranged her best jelly glasses on the mantelpiece before her mother's picture. The proximity of the picture made her grab it and kiss it again, the ice cube in her mouth cracking against the glass.
"I say a prayer for you every day, babe,"
Santa told the snapshot incoherently, balancing the ice cube on her tongue.
"You better believe there's a candle burning for you over in St. Odo's."
Someone knocked at the front shutters. In putting the picture down hurriedly, Santa tipped it over on its face.
"Irene!"
Santa screamed when she opened the door and saw the hesitant Mrs. Riley on the front steps and her nephew, Patrolman Mancuso, standing down on the banquette.
"Come on in, sweetheart darling. You sure looking cute."
"Thanks, honey," Mrs. Riley said.
"Whew, I forgot how long it takes to drive down here. Me and Angelo been in that car almost an hour."
"Is the traffic is what it is,"
Patrolman Mancuso offered.
"Listen to that cold," Santa said. "Aw, Angelo, you better tell them men at the precinct to take you out that toilet. Where's Rita?"
"She did it feel like cubic. She's got her a headache."
"Well, no wonder, locked up in that house with them kids all day long," Santa said. "Aw, she ought to get out, Angelo. What's wrong with that girl?"
"Nerves," Angelo answered sadly. "She's got nervous trouble."
"Nerves is terrible," Mrs. Riley said. "You know what happened, Santa? Angelo lost the book Ignatius gave him. Ain't that a shame? I don't mind about the book, but don't never tell Ignatius about it. We'll really have us a fight on our hands."
Mrs. Riley put her finger to her lips to indicate that the book must forever be a secret.
"Well, give me your coat, girl,"
Santa said eagerly, almost tearing Mrs. Riley's old purple woolen topper off. She was determined that the ghost of Ignatius J. Riley would not haunt her party as it had haunted so many evenings of bowling.
"You got you a nice place here, Santa," Mrs. Riley said respectfully. "It's clean."
"Yeah, but I want to get me some new linoleum for the parlor.
You ever use them paper curtains, honey? They don't look too bad. I seen some nice ones up by Maison Blanche."
"I bought some nice paper curtains for Ignatius's room once, but he tore them off the window and crumpled them up. He says they an abortion. Ain't that awful?"
"Everybody to his own taste," Santa observed quickly.
"Ignatius don't know I come here tonight. I told him I was going to a novena."
"Angelo, fix Irene here a nice drink. Take a little whiskey yourself. Help out that cold. I got some cokes in the kitchen."
"Ignatius don't like novenas neither. I don't know what that boy likes. Personally, I'm getting kind of fed up on Ignatius, even if he is my own child."
"I fixed us a good potato salad, girl. That old man tells me he likes a good potato salad."
"You ought to see them big uniforms he's giving me to launder, and all the directions I get on how to wash them. He sounds like he's selling soap powder on the TV. Ignatius acts like he's really made good pushing that wagon around downtown."
"Look at Angelo, babe. He's fixing us a nice drink."
"You got any aspirins, honey?"
"Aw, Irene. What kind of party pooper I got on my hands? Take a drink. Wait till the old man comes. We're gonna have us a nice time. Look, you and the old man can dance right in front of the phonograph."
"Dance? I don't feel like dancing with no old man. Besides, my feet swole up this afternoon while I was ironing them uniforms."
"Irene, you can't disappoint him, girl.
You should have seen his face when I invited him out in front of church. Poor old man. I bet nobody asked him out." "He wanted to come, huh?"
"Wanted to come? He asked me should he wear a suit."
"And what you told him, honey?"
"Well, I said, wear whatever you want, mister."
"Well, that's nice."
Mrs. Riley looked down at her green taffeta cocktail dress.
"Ignatius asked me why I was wearing a cocktail dress to go to a novena. He's sitting in his room right now, writing some foolishness. I says, 'What's that you writing now, boy?' And he say, 'I'm writing about being a weenie vendor.' Ain't that terrible? Who want to read a story like that? You know how much he brought home from the weenie place today? $4. How am I going to pay off that man?"
"Look,
Angelo fixed us a nice highball.
Mrs. Riley took a jelly glass from Angelo and drank half of it in two gulps.
Where you got that nice high fly from, darling?
What you mean? Santa asked.
That gramophone you got in the middle of the floor.
That's my little niece's. She's precious. Just graduated out of St. Odo High, and she's already got her a good sales lady job.
You see that?
Mrs. Riley said excitedly.
I bet she's making better than Ignatius.
Lord, Angelo, Santa said.
Stop that coughing. Go lay down in the back and rest up till the old man comes.
Poor Angelo,
Mrs. Riley said after the patrolman had left the room.
He's sure a sweet boy. You two sure been good friends to me. And to think we all met when he tried to arrest Ignatius.
I wonder how come that old man ain't showed up yet.
Maybe he's not coming, Santa.
Mrs. Riley finished her drink.
I'm gonna make me another one, if you don't mind, sugar. I got problems.
Go ahead, babe. I'm gonna take your coat back in the kitchen and see how Angelo's making out. I sure got two happy people at my party so far. I hope that old man don't fall down and break his leg on the way over.
After Santa had left, Mrs. Riley filled her glass with bourbon and added a jigger of 7-Up. She picked up the spoon, tasted the potato salad, and, cleaning the spoon with her lips, put it back on the paper napkin. The family in the other half of Santa's double house was beginning to stage what sounded like a riot. Sipping her drink, Mrs. Riley put her ear to the wall and tried to filter some meaning out of the loud shouting.
"Angelo's taking some cough medicine,"
Santa said as she returned to the parlor.
"You sure got you good walls in this building, babe,"
Mrs. Riley said, unable to comprehend the gist of the argument on the other side of the wall.
"I wish me and Ignatius lived here. Miss Annie wouldn't have nothing to complain about."
"Where's that old man?"
Santa asked the front shutters.
"Maybe he ain't gonna come."
"Maybe he forgot."
"That's the way it is with old folks, honey."
"He ain't that old, Irene."
"How old is he?"
"Someplace in his late 60s, I guess."
"Well, that ain't too old. My poor old Tante Marguerite, the one I told you them kids beat up on to get 50 cents out her coin purse, she going on 80.
Mrs. Riley finished her drink.
"Maybe he went to see a nice picture show or something. Santa, you mind if I make me another drink?"
"Irene, you gonna be on the floor, girl. I ain't gonna introduce no drunk to this nice old man."
"I'll make me a small one. I got nerves tonight."
Mrs. Riley slopped down a great deal of whiskey into her glass and sat down again, crushing one of the bags of potato chips.
"Oh, Lord, what I done now?"
"You just smashed them potato chips,"
Santa said, a little angrily.
"Aw, they all crumbs now,"
Mrs. Riley said, pulling the bag from beneath her. She studied the flattened cellophane.
"Listen, Santa, what time you got? Ignatius says he's sure the burglars is striking tonight and for me to get in early."
"Oh, take it easy, Irene. You just got here."
"To tell you the truth, Santa, I don't think I want to meet this old man."
"Well, it's too late now."
"Yeah, but what me and this old man gonna do?"
Mrs. Riley asked apprehensively.
"Aw, relax, Irene. You're making me nervous. I'm sorry I asked you over."
Santa pulled Mrs. Riley's drink down from her lips for a moment.
"Now listen to me. You had arthritis very bad. The bowling's helping that out, right? You were stuck home with that crazy boy every night until Santa come along, right? Now listen to Santa, precious. You don't want to end up all alone with that Ignatius on your hands. This old man looks like he's got him a little money. He dresses neat. He knows you from somewhere. He likes you."
Santa looked Mrs. Riley in the eye.
"This old man can pay off your debt."
"Yeah?"
Mrs. Riley hadn't thought of this before. The old man suddenly became a little more attractive.
"He's clean?"
"Sure he's clean," Santa said angrily. "You think I'm trying to fix my friend up with a bum?"
Someone knocked lightly at the shutters on the front door.
Oh, I bet that's him,
Santa said eagerly.
Tell him I had to go, honey.
Go? Where are you going to, Irene? The man's right by the front door.
He is, huh?
Let me go take a look.
Santa opened the door and pushed the shutters outward.
Hey, Mr. Robichaud,
she said into the night to someone whom Mrs. Riley couldn't see.
We've been waiting for you. My friend Miss Riley here's been wondering where you was. Come on in out the cold. Yeah, Miss Battaglia, I'm sorry I'm a little late, but I had to take my grandchildren around the neighborhood. They're raffling some rosaries for the sisters.
I know, Santa said. I bought a chance from a little kid just the other day. They're beautiful rosaries. A lady I know won the outboard motor the sisters was raffling last year.
Mrs. Riley sat frozen on the sofa, staring into her drink as if she had just discovered a roach floating in it.
Irene! Santa cried. What you doing, girl? Say hello to Mr. Robichaud.
Mrs. Riley looked up and recognized the old man whom Patrolman Mancuso had arrested in front of D.H. Holmes.
Glad to meet you,
Mrs. Riley said to her drink.
Maybe Miss Riley don't remember,
Mr. Robichaud told Santa, who was beaming happily.
But we met before. To think you two are old friends,
Santa said happily.
It's sure a small world.
Aye, aye, aye,
Mrs. Riley said, her voice choked with misery.
Eh, la, la.
You remember, Mr. Robichaud said to her. It was downtown by Holmes. That policeman tried to take in your boy, and he took me in instead.
Santa's eyes opened wide.
Oh, yeah, Mrs. Riley said. I think I remember now. A little.
It wasn't your fault, though, Miss Riley. It's them police. They're all a bunch of communists.
Not so loud, Mrs. Riley cautioned. They got thin walls in this building.
She moved her elbow and knocked her empty glass off the arm of the sofa.
Oh, Lord. Santa, maybe you ought to go tell Angelo to run along. I can get me a taxi. Tell him he can run out the back way. It's easier for him, you know?
I see what you mean, honey.
Santa turned to Mr. Robichaud.
Listen, when you seen my friend and me down by the bowling alley, you didn't see no man with us, huh? You ladies was all alone.
Wasn't that the night A got himself arrested?
Mrs. Riley whispered to Santa.
Oh, yeah, Irene. You come by for me in that car of yours. You remember the fender came loose entirely right in front of the bowling alley?
I know. I got it in the back seat. Ignatius is the one made me wreck that car. He got me so nervous from the back seat.
No, Mr. Robichaud said. The one thing I can't stand is a poor loser or a bad sport. If somebody does me dirt, Santa continued, I try to turn the other cheek. You know what I mean? That's the Christian way. Ain't that right, Irene?
That's right, darling,
Mrs. Riley agreed half-heartedly.
Santa, sweet, you got some nice aspirins.
Irene, Santa said angrily. You know, Mr. Robichaud, now suppose you saw that cop that took you in. I hope I never see him again, Mr. Robichaud said with emotion. He's a dirty communist. Them people want to set up a police state.
Yeah, but just supposing. Wouldn't you forgive and forget? Santa,
Mrs. Riley interrupted,
I think I'm going to run in the kitchen and see if you got some nice aspirins.
It was a disgrace, Mr. Robichaud said to Santa. My whole family heard about it. The police called up my daughter. Aw, that ain't nothing, Santa said. Everybody gets took in sometime in their life. You see her?
Santa picked up the photograph lying face down on the mantelpiece and showed it to her two guests.
My poor dear mama. The police took her out to Lautenschlager Market 4 times for disturbing the peace.
Santa paused to give the snapshot a moist kiss.
You think she cared? Not her.
That's your mama?
Mrs. Riley asked interestedly.
She had it hard, huh? Mother's got a hard road to travel, believe me.
So, as I was saying, Santa continued, I wouldn't feel bad about getting arrested. Policemen got them a hard line of work. Sometimes they make a mistake. They're only human, after all.
I always been a decent citizen, Mrs. Riley said. I want to go wrench out my glass in the zinc.
Oh, go sit down, Irene. Let me talk to Mr. Robichaud.
Mrs. Riley went over to the old console radio and poured herself a glass of early times.
I'll never forget that patrolman Mancuso, Mr. Robichaud was saying. Mancuso?
Santa asked with great surprise.
I got plenty of relatives with that very same name. As a matter of fact, one of them's on the force. As a matter of fact, he's here now.
I think I hear Ignatius calling me. I better go.
Calling you? Santa asked. What do you mean, Irene? Ignatius is 6 miles away uptown. Look, we ain't even give Mr. Robichaud a drink. Fix him a drink, kid, while I go get Angelo.
Mrs. Riley studied her drink furiously in the hope of turning up a roach, or at least a fly.
Give me that coat, Mr. Robichaud. What your friends call you?
Claude.
Claude, I'm Santa, and that there's Irene. Irene, say hello.
Hello,
Mrs. Riley said automatically.
You two make friends while I'm gone,
Santa said, and disappeared into the other room.
How's that fine big boy of yours?
Mr. Robichaud asked to end the silence that had fallen.
Who?
Your son.
Oh, him. He's okay.
Mrs. Riley's mind flew back to Constantinople Street, where she had left Ignatius writing in his room and mumbling something about Myrna Minkoff. Through the door, Mrs. Riley had heard Ignatius saying to himself,
"She must be lashed until she drops."
There was a long silence, broken only by the violent sipping noises that Mrs. Riley made on the rim of her glass.
"You want some nice potato chips?"
Mrs. Riley finally asked, for she found that the silence made her even more ill at ease.
"Yeah, I think I would."
"They right in the bag next to you."
Mrs. Riley watched Mr. Robichaud open the cellophane package. His face and his gray gabardine suit both seemed to be neat and freshly pressed.
"Maybe Santa needs some help. Maybe she went and fell down."
"She just left the room a minute ago. She'll be back."
"These floors are dangerous,"
Mrs. Riley observed, studying the shiny linoleum intently.
"You could slip down and crack your skull wide open."
"You gotta be careful in life."
"Ain't that the truth? Me, I'm always careful."
"Me too. It pays to be careful."
"It sure does. That's what Ignatius said just the other day,"
Mrs. Riley lied.
"He says to me, 'Mama, it sure pays to be careful, don't it?' And I says to him, 'That's right, son. Take care.'"
"That's good advice."
"I'm all the time giving Ignatius advice. You know, I'm always trying to help him out."
"I bet you a good mama. I seen you and that boy downtown plenty times, and I always thought what a fine-looking big boy he was. It kind of stands out, you know?"
"I try with him. I say, 'Be careful, son. Watch you don't slip down and crack your skull open or fracture your arm.'"
Mrs. Riley sucked at the ice cubes a bit.
"Ignatius learned safety at my knee. He's always been grateful for that."
"That's good training, believe me."
"I tell Ignatius, I say, 'Take care when you cross the street, son.'"
"You gotta watch out in traffic, Irene. You don't mind if I call you by your first name, huh?"
"Feel free."
"Irene's a pretty name."
"You think so? Ignatius says he don't like it."
Mrs. Riley crossed herself and finished her drink.
"I sure got a hard road, Mr. Robichaud. I don't mind telling you."
"Call me Claude."
"As God is my witness, I got an awful cross to bear. You want a nice drink?"
"Yeah, thanks. Not too strong, though. I'm not a drinking man."
Oh, Lord!
Mrs. Riley sniffed, filling two glasses to the rim.